From April 22nd to the 24th of 2009, over 50 people gathered in Washington, D.C. to demand more low-power FM radio through the passage of the Local Community Radio Act. Organized by the Prometheus Radio Project, a media justice advocacy group, the conference brought together people from diverse communities, ranging from farm workers from Florida and Oregon, artists and musicians from Chicago to New Jersey, media activists and youth organizers from Atlanta to Detroit, low-wage workers from Baltimore, members of the faith community from rural North Carolina, and radio programmers from Idaho to New York City. Low-power FM radio stations, or LPFMs, are community-based, non-commercial radio stations that operate at 100 watts or less, broadcasting within a 3 to 5 mile radius. As the gathering brought together representatives from existing LPFMs, groups that wish to have an LPFM, and supporters that advocate for community media, the goal of this visit to D.C. was to demonstrate popular support for expanding low-power FM to legislators and to strengthen the LPFM movement by collectively learning about both the grassroots action and policy work needed to support the growth and sustainability of community radio. According to the Prometheus Radio Project, there has been nearly a decade of groundwork already laid leading up to this point so close to victory. After years of fighting unfair legislation in Congress and waging uphill battles against the big broadcasters, the LPFM radio community has refused to be silenced. Thousands of people across the country have called their congressional representatives, signed postcards, written letters, and sent emails. Community organizations nationwide have introduced city council resolutions in support of expanding LPFM. Recently, a resolution passed in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, Hartford, Connecticut, and an LPFM resolution hearing in Boston, Massachusetts is on the horizon. Among others, people involved in media justice organizations shared their experiences in the movement and described the work they do. First, Christopher Rios from People's Production House in New York City told us more about their role in building stronger local community media.
For PPH, what media justice is really, we believe that media literacy is crucial to that process. And the way that we do media literacy, or the way that we envision media literacy, is through production and policy work. The policy work is why we're here, but also the production work, because we have communities in New York, communities in D.C., and communities in New Orleans that we train to do their own community radio, their own community media. And for us, it's really important that, you know, it's important that they learn how to do this radio, how to do this media, but just learning how the production skills isn't enough if they don't have outlets to share their voices, outlets to share their media. So what we also do is, in addition to training them how to do the media, we train them how to do policy work. We show them the structure of how media is run in this country, and then we empower them to advocate for themselves for more outlets we show them how to advocate for themselves to come to D.C. and to come and advocate for themselves and say, look, we want you guys to give us more low-powered FM radio stations. We want more access to the places that we can put our media. So Julia Paul, she's a member of Families for Freedom, and she went through our Community News Production Institute training. It's a 12-week training that we do in New York City, but we've also done it in New Orleans. And for 12 weeks, she came once a week, and we taught her how to do her own radio. And now she's graduated. We call her a reporter, and she's out doing her own stories. And this is a story that she brought to us recently. It's really community radio. It's her neighborhood. She noticed that a lot of the businesses in her neighborhood were trying new things or adapting to the current economic recession. And she asked us if we would be interested in helping her do a piece. And it actually didn't really take much help because she had the training already. She just wanted help with getting her stuff played on the radio. So we said, sure, go ahead and do it. Bring it to us, and we'll see what we can do. And she brought us this excellent piece, and we had it played on our monthly show on WBAI. And since then, it's actually it's been put in our website, and it's been we had a request for it for another radio station. So that's sort of an example of some of the work that we do. Now with Radio Roots, we work in schools and we train high school students mostly to do similar work, but it's over the course of the school year.
Next, we heard from Desi Burnett from the Media Mobilizing Project based in Philadelphia.
At MMP, we are organizers first and media makers second. We are also a network of groups made up of the Philadelphia Student Union, the Unified Taxi Workers Alliance, groups fighting to stay in their neighborhoods and fighting gentrification. We are SEIU 32BJ, workers who clean up the condominiums and the office buildings in the city, hotel workers, and many other people. We're also sons and daughters of prisoners, of sons and daughters of domestic workers. We are Harvard grads, intellectuals, and media makers. The Media Mobilizing Project came from two veins. One of them, which holds a very dear place in my heart, is Dr. King's final kind of movement, where he was trying to link up all these different groups of who were fighting poverty together to have a national movement of poor people to end poverty. And it was in that shift from his shift from fighting for civil rights to economic rights for all people that he was shot and killed. And that movement is kind of been put on pause the way that we see it. And so a lot of our work came from that. The other vein of our work comes from Subcomandante Marcos's call for a network of independent media makers and media distribution sources, or the IMC. And so that's kind of a little bit of the background of MMP. One thing that we always say at MMP is that movements begin with the telling of untold stories. And in the work that we do, there's a lot of people and a lot of stories that have to be told. And the one that I just wanted to share really briefly with people today is about what's going on in Philadelphia right now. The city of Philadelphia is one where half the people live in poverty. We've been in crisis for a really long time, and what we're seeing now in this moment, in this current economic crisis, is an intensification of that crisis in people's daily lives. And also, we are seeing this crisis being used to push forward an agenda that's been around for a really long time. And so what this means in real terms is that the city is planning to put two casinos, for example, in the city of Philadelphia. At the same time, they're making plans to shut down Northeastern Hospital, which is one of six maternity wards in the city, not because it's not busy, not because people don't need it, but because it's not profitable. There's a plan to shut down that will be voted on today, a plan by the school district that will see the shutting down of 35 schools, and some of them will stay shut down. Others will be reopened as charter schools, which are essentially nonprofit companies that will run our schools, which amounts to, in some people's view, another attempt at privatizing our school system. We're seeing a lot of labor abuses and layoffs in this current crisis, and we're also seeing massive housing foreclosures in a city where we had a very high rate of home ownership amongst people who made under $20,000 a year in the city. So I kind of wanted to just share a little bit about that, because the media that we do is rooted in all of that. And if you are a media maker with MMP, the eyes and ears of what we're doing, I mean, you go from one of those things to the next, to the next, to the next. And you can really see the way that all of those things are actually connected to each other. MMP came out of seeing the ways that our movements and our organizations and our issues were so fragmented and separated. And there's lots of reasons for that, one of them being this funding, this issue of trying to find funding and being in competition with each other for that. And so it really kind of, but there's a lot of other reasons. There's a lot of reasons. And so we really see media and communications as a way to really connect people, to connect groups, to connect sectors, and to use our media to shift the entire frame and the entire message about what's going on in the city. And we're seeing that happen a little like I mean, just an example of the work that's been going on in the city around making media for the last 3 years together, just by making our own media, we've really been able to make the mainstream media say something else, actually. And now we're at a point where 2 weeks ago, we're getting phone calls from Channel 6 News to use our footage to put on of the casino fight because they didn't have it. Or today, the Philadelphia Student Union, because of they are members of WPEB 88.1, can go into the press room and they can interrupt the message of the CEO of the school district who wants to frame them and marginalize them in a certain way. And so there are certain ways that we've seen just by making our own media and saying what's really going on that actually shifts the entire conversation in another way. So what was I also was I going to say? I'm not used to being surrounded by the microphones. I'm used to being behind it. So I mean, on this point around the movement to end poverty led by the poor, one of the things that's really important for the work we do in training people as media makers, but also in the various groups that are part of this network, is the development of leaders. And we see a need for there to be many, many people who are just very clear about what's going on and who are in a position to be leaders of these various movements and of this larger, broader movement. We see, like I said earlier, we see media and communications as a way to break the isolation of individuals so that students can now talk to students and workers can now talk to workers and immigrants can talk to other immigrants in their community. But we also see it as a way to break the communication amongst those various groups so that now when we're doing reports on Radio Tlacuache, like we were birthed inside of this network so that we are able to talk about what's going on in the immigrant community, but we're also able to see the ways that the shutting down of 35 schools, which is the fight of the Philadelphia Student Union, is going to affect our people too. We can see the ways that labor abuses are affecting our people too, and especially when it comes to labor issues, I think breaking that division between immigrants and non-immigrants is just critical. In that same area of work, we've seen a priority to really think about the language barriers of the folks within the network and in the city, and have, and I don't really know what to say about radio and that, but I think that's just putting it out there. That's a really critical part of our work, that every event that we do be bilingual, that we have interpretation, and that our media be subtitled, and that people are talking across language. I guess the other thing I wanted to say around the movement part is that the first step we really see is kind of breaking the isolation and communicating with each other, but it's at some point we also have to begin to act together and work together, and I think that you see that in our network too, and in the montage you will see that there's this collective action of people coming out for each other's actions, and hopefully at some point a consolidated work together as well. In, I think it was around 2000, the U.S. government issued a study where they wanted to understand social movements, and they issued this study. They asked this corporation, multi-billion corporation called the RAND Corporation, to do a study to see like how certain social movements were effective, and they studied the I'm going to get this all. I'm so bad at like actual dates and stuff like that and real like facts or whatever, but they. So they like issued this study, and one of the movements that they studied, for example, was the Zapatista movement and various other things that were, you know, kind of effective. And what they found, one of the things that they found was that they kind of came up with this term called net war, and it's something that we study a lot. And the concept of net war is that there's like in this information age that we have to be kind of organized in a different way, or that, you know, they, from their perspective, have to be organized in a different way, and that way is through being networked together. And that also that media and communications today is central in the outcome of any social conflict. That today we are in a battle for hearts and minds, and that we are in a war, and that war is fought through messaging, through ideas, through stories. And so in that, we really see media and communications, and radio is totally part of that. Not just radio and video and internet, but being in spaces like this where we're face-to-face talking to each other, where we're building relationships, but that that all of those things are important for the outcome of all of our various fights and of our collective fight.
Finally, Jenny Lee talked to us about the Allied Media Project in Detroit.
So from our vantage point within Allied Media Projects, we're actually really lucky because we're based in Detroit, but we're a national organization, and we get to see how all of these different pieces of the media justice movement, the media democracy, and transformative media movements all fit together. And it's everything, you know, the way that we get to see this happen is through an annual gathering in Detroit called the Allied Media Conference. And the kinds of media and the kinds of justice work that takes place there is a wide spectrum. And our definition of media includes everything from breakdancing to building your own transmitter, which happens every year in the basement thanks to the help of Prometheus. And it happens, we see media's ability to transform individuals and communities and structures of power from the individual level to the community level to the network-wide level, and all of that really converges through the AMC. Just the things that people were mentioning, like the on the most personal level, just having that, whether you call it consciousness raising or just having an expanded sense of what's possible for yourself and your community through the kind of media that you're consuming, but also the kind of media that you're then creating. Is so key to the process of change. And then the community level of what MMP does in being able to build a whole infrastructure of communications to link anti-poverty work and, you know, anti-privatization work within schools is sort of like the strength that we have on the community level. And then across our cities and, you know, across oceans even, the networks that we can build with people doing similar work. Maka and I had a really brief conversation earlier about the work of immigrant communities in New Haven using radio as an emergency alert system for raids against their communities, and that's exactly what communities in Southwest Detroit are trying to do with radio as well. And so thinking about how to build networks across all these different approaches. So this is really what happens in Detroit during the Allied Media Conference for 3 days in the summer. And we definitely invite everyone here to continue the work that's happening in these 3 days in Detroit by being able to just, you know, reconnect and see each other's faces, but also continue the important strategizing work that's going to be taking place. And ultimately, all of the people who come to the conference, well, they come from many different communities and types of media and ages and styles. Everyone comes with this belief that media can transform our own and our community's sense of what's possible. And ultimately that process of expanding our sense of what's possible can't happen simply from changing the kind of messages that we receive over the airwaves or that we receive through our TVs. You know, even if it was the most revolutionary messaging that was coming through those channels, ultimately, it's through our ability to create media as people who have been traditionally told that we are not allowed to, that it's not our job to be putting our stories and our voices out there, that is ultimately where our power lies, and that we need an entirely new structure, a new system that fosters our participation in it. And that's really, you know, why it's so important and we're so thrilled to be here in participating in the LPFM lobbying days, and that when our media encourages the participation of multiple voices from the margins, the people who have traditionally been told that this is not, you know, our work, then the kinds of solutions that we come up with as communities and the ways of understanding our problems as communities are fundamentally different than anything we ever, you know, otherwise would have been able to fight for. So with that, participatory media is really the heart of what brings people together in Detroit for the Allied Media Conference. And I guess I would just add, too, from the more personal side of it within Detroit, because like I said, it's a national conference, but we're very rooted in Detroit. Detroit is a place in really deep crisis, as in many of our neighborhoods and communities, but just on at such a scale that I think is really unique. But at the same time, there is a opportunity within that sense of, well, things can't get any worse, to be really innovating ways of communicating and coming up with solutions as communities for our own problems without necessarily relying on systems to provide those. And the work that's happening in Detroit through media in the undocumented immigrant communities of Detroit, amongst the students, of which there are increasingly fewer. We have a 75% dropout rate, and those young people who have been pushed to the outsides of the education system, now using media to really investigate the heart of what is going wrong with our education system, and employing their creativity and critical thinking to be proposing new forms of education. All of this is happening, and so the process of creating media is ultimately being able to distribute it and have it be heard. And that's where issues of LPFM become so central, because in Detroit we have incredible amounts of work happening, like I said earlier, and very few outlets for the other neighborhoods within the city even, but the rest of the country and the world to know about.
There are currently about 800 LPFMs in the states. With the passage of the 2009 Local Community Radio Act, there will be spaces for possibly thousands more community radio stations. At the conference, we heard some testimonials from existing community radio stations. First, we heard from Scott Sanders from Radio Free Nashville.
Radio Free Nashville, with the help of Prometheus Radio, we had our barn raising about 4 years ago, and we've been blasting all 100 watts that we can. I guess what I have to tell you is going to be a bit disjointed because I don't really have anything prepared. But the main thing to take away from Radio Free Nashville is that if you've ever been to the South or lived in the South, you know that the cities aren't really designed where you have a central organization of a community. So, you know, there's logistics as far as getting to the studio, getting out of it, but you know, we combat that the best we can. And I would in my mind, I would think that where there wasn't a community before, a sense of community before, having a radio station for people to actually put their hands on and work with and see progress with, that actually builds a sense of community where there might not have been one before. With Radio Free Nashville, we also are involved with teaching young people in our community how to use the radio, how to get their voices heard, because as we all know, the main problem with media today is that you don't have an outlet if you don't own, you know, a 100,000-watt station. You know, if you don't have a strong lobbying arm, or if you don't have, you know, a huge corporation to back you, your voice isn't going to be heard. And so, you know, we're very tied in with getting the young people in our community access to a channel of media other than just, you know, a student newspaper or something like that. It's called Young Voices of Nashville, and we recently, just talking about some progress that you can make with a low-power FM station, you know, because when you set your sights on just the radio station, that's great because that's huge and everybody's got a radio. But with Radio Free Nashville, we kind of saw it as part of a larger network of media, and so we've in the past year actually built production studios in downtown Nashville at what's called the Oasis Center for homeless youth, at-risk youth, to come in and do their own shows, and we've also started a newspaper, which is called it's not called Radio Free Nothing. It's called Nashville Free Press, and that's why I got confused. But, of course, you know, we can't be really affiliated with any sort of political thought. So it's more or less just the people who were involved with Radio Free Nashville saw fit to take it a step further and invent a completely new entity. But, you know, that's what you get when you have a radio station that brings like-minded people together, people who know they have a voice, know they have something to say, and, you know, they start saying it on one channel, on one media outlet, and they realize there's no reason to stop there. And so that's what our paper is about. You know, we realize that our frequency is very low. You know, 100 watts doesn't reach very far. So, you know, as far as we can take the voices of the voiceless, that's what we're going to do. I guess that's about it.
Next, we heard from Lupito Flores from Thin Air Radio in Spokane.
I'm Lupito Flores, the station manager of KYRS in Spokane, Washington. We were the fourth Prometheus barn raising, and I'm still thanking Pete and everybody every time, every chance I can. So here's the latest T-shirt for you. Spokane's population is about 300,000, and we think we're the third or fourth largest city to get a low-powered FM station. We've been on the air since 2003. We feel really, really lucky to have one of these in our community. Like I said before, we're surrounded by Clear Channel and Citadel and all the commercial stations and a pretty bad national public radio station that just pipes in the satellite stuff on three stations. One daily newspaper that's laying off people like crazy. And so we are providing the community with just amazing programming. When we started in 2003, we had about a dozen live shows. Now we have 60 or 80 locally produced. We have the only locally produced Native American programs, the only locally produced African American, Spanish language, youth programming, GLBT. What else? I wrote some of them down because there's so many I keep forgetting. There's a large Russian refugee community in Spokane, and we had a Russian language program, the only one in Spokane. And then the host moved away, so we're trying to replace that. We have programs hosted by middle school and high school students, and we're working on an elementary school aged program. We are dependent on a translator, though, because of the FCC spacing regulations. Our transmitter is 10 miles out of town, and so on our main frequency, most people can't hear the station. And after a year of operating that way, we had a separate group apply for a translator station because low-powered FM stations can't own translators. So most people, like 99% of our listeners, are tuning into a translator station. And because of that, because low-powered FM is so restricted in a lot of ways, we applied for a full-powered non-commercial station, and our engineer is telling us we're going to get the permit any day now, so we're really excited about that. It's been a while. It will nearly double or triple our coverage area. We'll be able to serve the Spokane and Colville Indian reservations, and so we're excited, really excited about that. We were one of the stations, one of the first LPFMs that faced the encroachment issue. There was a full-powered commercial station in Idaho, a state away, on our same frequency, and they got a permit to move closer to Spokane, and if and when they did that, we would have been knocked off the air. And with the help of Prometheus and our Senator Cantwell and a great broadcast engineer and broadcast attorney, it took us like a year and a half to beat that, and we set the precedent for moving to a second adjacent channel and another waiver that we had to get. But so it's been a lot of work. I didn't have this gray hair before I started the station, but it's really paid off. We hear people all the time either email or calling us or coming down to the station practically in tears saying, if it wasn't for the station, I would have moved out of this city a long time ago. So we know that we're doing the right thing when we hear things like that, and we're just going to continue and try to keep it going. Thanks.
Finally, we heard from Arubiel Vallardes from Radio Movimiento.
I want all of you to actually pay attention, and we're going to actually use our hands, our ears, and our eyes. I usually start with the Campesino Club, and the Campesino Club means a lot more than just what's the Campesino Club. Okay, it means unity. And as you all can tell, we all are here gathered from different backgrounds, from different languages, from different history. But what that means for the club means that we all finally, at one time, there is one particular time where we all actually clapping at the same time, which creates the unity that why we are here in one reason. So, and I'm gonna follow after that, and I hope it's not loud enough. But hey, I don't know. Can we be loud? Yeah. So, and the other part of this is that I'm gonna ask, ¿se puede? Can we? That's a question. Can we? And then the answer is usually, yes, we can. Sí se puede. And the reason behind that is a positive message that goes to the root. And the root of it is unity and the mentality. We think that it's positive, something positive is going to happen. So let's try it, okay? And it goes slow and then goes louder and louder, and we'll all be able to hear one clap as a unity group. Ready? So there was one particular time that all of us were clapping at the same time. So what this KPCNLP, PECUN, as an organization for farm worker labor, we take this to heart. And what I mean by heart, literally by heart. Because myself, I didn't realize I saw something that it was not part of me until I actually met it and be in contact with it. And what that was is I'm a leader of my own community. And what that means, it means more than you know, all of us have explained a lot of wonderful things that are happening, and we're taking leadership in so many different levels. And what we're doing is using the radio as a capacity, as a tool, as a organizing tool to mobilize all of these people that are around us. And we are blessed by having our antenna so high that we can reach 50-mile radius with a flat platform, demographics, or all community have different backgrounds, Mexicano, there is people that are from Salvador, from Argentina, we have indigenous groups that speak Mixteco, Zapoteco, Nahuatl, Purépecha, and we grab them, actually we don't grab them, we grab each other, and they come part of this unity. So what I'm trying to say here is that The radio station have opened a door that we didn't have before. And what this means is that once you open that door, a lot of things are going to come through. So you better be ready for that. Because if you're not, you're going to make a mistake that's going to hurt other people, the people that you love, the people, your own community. So the radio station have helped us in so many ways. I'll give you one down-to-heart story, which is a person that had a disease that needed to go back to his to California, came to a radio station on a Saturday. He came in and like, I need help. Okay, well, we put him in. We did a call for help. He got $100 more than he expected. He only needed 20. That right there is a shock to the community for me to see that the community respond to our words, to our necessities. And two hours, when I said hours, I mean that community, not just myself. And the community means a base, a group of people that you actually have in contact with, a group of people that you care about, a group of people that you know their story, you know their struggles, and those struggles are as well as yours. Because what I take that all of us that are here have something at some point in your life, at some event, change you. Open your eyes and say, like, holy crap. This is bigger than we think, and we have to fight it. Well, the clap means that. If we all of us come in a unity and be able to hear one loud, one clap, it's stronger, it's meaningful, it's more impacting. And we have different experiences with Seattle FCC, where we had that. That was a great example of how the people get together. From all the backgrounds, and I'm talking literally, all the backgrounds that were there, telling the chairman, you know, what the hell is wrong with you? Why you put it 5 days before you give us such a small time? And people reacted. So what we're doing as a community radio station is really engaging the community, giving the community that tool to say, here you go. You can use this to be an outlet of your own struggles, your own words, because my words are different from someone else that comes from Michoacán, Oaxaca, Guanajuato, Argentina, Salvador. There are different interpretations. And that's what we're doing as a low power FM. And we came to a encroachment, and we're still fighting. And, you know, it's a constant struggle. But the one thing that keeps us together is the one feeling, say, unity. And we use this clap over and over and over because we know for a fact that the people that in our community are being bombarded by all of this crap from the commercial radio stations. Don't get unity. Don't be in a union. Look at this nice girl that you can, you know, imagine so many things. So using sexism, classism, racism in different shapes, ways, and forms. So we have to battle that somehow. And our weapons are pretty much clap, unity, si se puede, positive thinking. So we do that over and over because we know that will never stop until we actually, the people can say, si se puede back to us, with no restrictions, with no oppressing. And usually the oppression is by, I don't care about, you know, I'm not going to go to the match because I have to work. Well, we all have to work. That's, you know, realistic. But if you want to change that, because one thing that happened is the Real ID Act that affected Oregon. We told everybody, we told them, this is going to affect your driver's license. If you don't help us go loving, you're going to get affected. A year later, everyone came to the radio. What can we do to get our license back? We told you. So it is a great lesson to actually, for that community to learn, oh, they told us that this is going to happen. So when we tell them again, immigration reform is going to happen, well, guess what the community is going to do? They will react because they learn from the prior lessons. So that's how I can best express what our community radio station is doing with the people in Woodburn, Oregon. And because we are really in a small, concentrated area where a lot of Latinos come, we are blessed. We're so blessed, and we're using it in a positive way, leadership way, unity way. There is different tons of ways and levels that we can explain this, but we're doing it. And we're getting that feedback by the people coming to our radio station and want to do something about it. And that's when I'm like, good, come here, you can do this, and volunteer. So that's the best way I can explain what KPCN can do in Woodburn.
According to freepress.net, in 2000, Congress authorized the FCC to issue LPFM licenses, but legislators attached an unnecessary rule that limited LPFM stations to rural areas. Since then, thousands who submitted applications with the FCC to operate their own stations have been blocked. Big commercial broadcasters claimed LPFM stations would interfere with their signals, but according to a $2 million study ordered by Congress, known as the MITRE study, LPFM stations don't actually interfere with bigger FM outlets. The Local Community Radio Act of 2009 was introduced in the House by Representatives Mike Doyle and Lee Terry, and in the Senate by Senators Maria Cantwell and John McCain. This important legislation would eliminate current restrictions and authorize the Federal Communications Commission to license hundreds, if not thousands, of new LPFM stations in cities, towns, and suburbs across the country. Carl Desai from the Media Access Project based in D.C. further explained the current situation for LPFM in Congress.
So why are we here today? Back in 2000, when the FCC first created the LPFM service, they decided that they would allow LPFMs to exist on third adjacent channels, so basically three clicks away from an existing channel. After some testing, they figured there wasn't any interference issues. This would be an easy way to license LPFMs. So they decided three clicks away on the on the dial would be sufficient for interference reasons. Well, the NAB decided that they didn't like this. It was going to cause too much interference, so they said they made a big fuss on the Hill and in Congress, and Congress eventually decided that they wanted to study this issue a little bit more. So later in 2000, December 2000, Congress passed the Radio Broadcast Preservation Act, which basically prohibited the FCC from licensing LPFMs on third adjacent channels. This essentially prohibited about 75%, is that right? 75% of the LPFM applications from moving forward because the FCC couldn't allow them to exist on third adjacent channels. So third adjacent means if there's an existing channel on 90.3, you should be able to license three clicks away, which would be 90.9. We can't do that right now, so you're actually further away on 91 point something. So we would like to get stations on the third adjacent because it brings them closer to the city and it gives you more opportunities to get more frequencies. So that's the issue, is whether or not these stations could be licensed on the third adjacent channels. Eventually, the FCC hired an independent contractor who for 3 years studied the interference issue and decided that there was just no basis about the NAB's concerns. There would be no issues on third adjacent when it came to interference, and recommended that LPFMs should be licensed on third adjacent channels. The FCC since then has adopted the recommendation, and all commissioners have always supported the idea that LPFMs should be licensed on third adjacent channels, but because of the statute, they can't do it. So they need Congress to change the statute, to fix the statute to say, yes, now you can license LPFMs on third adjacent channels. So that's where we are right now. We're waiting for you guys to go lobby and tell your congressmen you want this bill to pass, and hopefully then we can increase the number of frequencies that are available for LPFM stations.
I talked to Pete Treadish from the Prometheus Radio Project about how the visits went at the Capitol and why this legislation matters now.
So what do you think the next steps are in terms of the low-power FM radio movement in the states?
Well, the April days that we did at the Capitol were pretty successful. We had about around 50 or 60 people coming from around the United States, from all different districts, and that's an important thing in American politics, is that, you know, there'd be representatives from all these different districts because they correspond to people that are on chairs of committees in Congress that are what allow the legislation to get voted on. And there were now 43 official co-sponsors on the bill to allow a lot more community radio in the United States. And we have another five or so commitments that have not yet been updated on the Congressional Research Service. So I'm pretty excited about that. We also have five co-sponsors in the Senate, which we hope to expand soon, but we've done pretty well in the Senate in earlier years, so we didn't focus there as much. And also during the days, we met with someone from the president's staff in the transition, which was Susan Crawford and Jim Kohlenberger, who are representatives of the new administration, and they heard about low power radio and trying to get promises from them to help to move the bill forward. We also met with people from the FCC, some of the decision makers there that will be deciding exactly how to implement low power FM after the bill gets passed. And so that was pretty productive as well in terms of making sure that they understood what kinds of groups there were that wanted to get these radio licenses, and what their policy options are in terms of treating low-power radio stations well and justly, and making more opportunities for community radio around the United States.
Why do you think it's important to push this bill through to expand low-power FM? What makes now the time to expand low-power FM?
Well, really, now is not the time. 8 years ago was the real time to expand the power of FM, and the problem was that the influence of the broadcasters was so great at that time that even though they had no real valid technical argument to prevent low power FM, they managed to confuse the existing Congress enough that Congress took some actions to limit low power FM and make it so that it really couldn't be in any of America's cities. The largest city that got a low power station was Richmond, Virginia. But we know that there are valid frequencies in a lot of larger cities. So what's really changed is not the science, because we've known for a real long time that 100-watt radio stations don't interfere with 50,000-watt radio stations. But what has changed is the politics. It isn't really just a Republican versus Democrat thing. One of our biggest problems was John Dingell, who was the congressman in charge of the Commerce Committee last year, and he, for a very long time, refused to bring this matter to a vote. Even though we told him, we had counted and we knew that we had enough supporters to pass the legislation, he just did not consider it to be important enough, and he didn't want it to go through, and I think that had a lot to do with his relationship with the National Association of Broadcasters. Fortunately, he has been replaced by Henry Waxman, and Henry Waxman is a long-term supporter of low-power radio, and he was a co-sponsor of the bill. And even back in 2000, he voted against the limitation of low-power FM. So to him, it just makes sense. It's a policy that he never thought should be limited in the first place, and now it's time to clean it up.
The power of grassroots organizing and pressure has been the foundation and fuel of the LPFM movement. What does low power FM mean in the larger context of a movement for media and social justice?
Well, low power FM is really important because it is a way that we can create locally based community institutions of media. Just in the same way that we don't just have a single federal government, but we also have a state government and a city government and county governments and down to PTAs and zoning boards. There's all different sizes of government for every different, function and every different thing that people are trying to do. Really, it should be the same way with the media, because the media is really supposed to be the watchdog of government. And so, unfortunately, the policies that we have today greatly, greatly favor consolidation and syndication and very large media. And so the American population knows a lot more about issues of national significance, like the presidential race or the war in Iraq, and these are very important issues. But we really know a lot less about news on a local level. People know a lot less about who their city councilors are or what issues are facing the PTA, because we get most of our information today through media, and it's not profitable to create media that's highly local in nature. And so it falls to volunteers and small community organizations to create media on that scale. And so really our media governance and our regulatory regime for media should be one that promotes and helps there to be local community media. Instead, we have one that really blatantly discourages it. And so that's what we really seek to change. It also, the same thing goes not just for politics, but also for culture. We in the United States have a system where there are a handful of very rich and famous stars in music. And it's not really that Britney Spears is all that much more talented than anyone else. It's just that she has the promotional power of the record labels behind her. And the interlocked relationships between the radio promotional apparatus and the concert tour companies and the billboard companies and all these sorts of things work together to make her very rich and famous, but other musicians that are local in towns throughout the United States can't even be heard on the radio because that's just simply not how our system is built. And we really think that low power radio could really help to create something that's more like more of a local economy of music. And not that, you know, it's bad to like music from far away, but it seems completely out of whack and out of balance that you could have you know, really good musicians that are, you know, just, you know, spend their whole lives waiting tables in their own city and they're completely unknown. Because they can't get on the radio because their radio is programmed from San Antonio. We think that it could restore some balance and some localism to culture, as well as politics.
Members from the United Workers in Baltimore, Carl Johnson and Veronica Dorsey, spoke about how an LPFM for their organization can contribute to building a stronger social justice movement.
First of all, my name is Veronica Dorsey, and I'm a leadership organizer with the United Workers. And we're really happy to be here so we can get our own radio station, too. But we need to let you know what our message is so you know why we want our own radio station. United Workers, we believe in finding our leadership amongst the ranks of the poor because only we can tell our story and only we can demand that our voices be heard. Can't nobody tell you what we need but us. So with finding our leaders, the United Workers also have a lot of leadership programs and projects that they set up to help us with our leadership skills. And a couple of programs we have are long-term. There's 2 3-year projects that they set up, which is the New Organizer Training Program, which I'm a member of. And that has to do with a lot of reading, a lot of research, a lot of workshops, a lot of personal relationships that we develop among other members. We go to their houses. We do home visits. We do site visits. We come to meet things like this in order to share and lessons learned. And then our other project that is 3 years long is our development cooperative. We're learning how to do business plans. We're learning how to do marketing. We're learning how to do media through and trying to work and be able to be our own worker owner business. We're trying to have our own business, which is a green cleaning co-op we're about to start through the training. And it's a 3-year process, and we'll be graduating with the credentials of a college degree because of these programs that we're going through that we'll be able to maintain once we graduate. And then for just the regular basic members, the projects that we have, we always have leadership days, leadership forums, and retreats that members can come together. And we just talk amongst each other, discussing what's going on in your different communities, things you would like to see changed, and just discussing the human rights value violations that we all are exposed to in Baltimore City. Because United Workers, we're a bilingual organization. We have Latino members, African-American, and white members. And also with those leadership programs, we have language classes. The English speakers are taking Spanish lessons, and the Spanish speakers are taking English lessons. So we don't always have to have an interpreter. We can get into those personal conversations one with the other.
So before that victory, one of our losses were when we wanted to plan a workers' co-op. We wanted to get, and it wouldn't cost the employers a penny more to start this workers' co-op. We went to Saginaw, Michigan, along the route of the Underground Railroad to meet with our employers. And we proposed the workers' co-op, and they said yes to the co-op. And the day we were supposed to start, they pulled the plug. So after we were defeated in that loss, we started planning for the hunger strike. And it took a year and a half for us to plan for this hunger strike. So that's when we, during that time, we pretty much stalked the governor. And we made him get us a living wage. So that's how we won that victory.
And after, you know, we were really happy after we won that victory, but we didn't want to be selfish. After that victory at Camden Yards, we decided to extend and expand across different sectors all across Baltimore City. And it was only when we arrived down the Baltimore City Inner Harbor, which was supposed to be, quote, our harbor, did we note it was major human rights violations going on down there. And just like us workers down at Camden Yards were being violated, we wanted to stand in solidarity with the Inner Harbor workers. So on October 25th of 2008, we declared Baltimore's Inner Harbor a human rights zone. Okay? Excuse me. And since October 25th that we declared the Inner Harbor a human rights zone, well, we did a press conference on March 6th, and we let them know the worst three human rights violators that were down at the Inner Harbor, and they were Cheesecake Factory, M&S Grill, and Phillips Seafood. Yeah, you guys all know about them, huh? Yeah, well, anyway, they're the three worst violators down at the Inner Harbor as far as human rights go. So then we, in turn, turned around on April 18th, we came together and we had a community fair, and a lot of you were there. And at that community fair, we came together as communities in unity, and we had a fair. And then after that fair, we had a protest from Carroll Park down to the Inner Harbor to be able to let the workers down in the Inner Harbor let us reveal the worst violators out of all three of those people, three of those restaurants, excuse me. And they chose Phillips Seafood Restaurant. And on April 18th, we announced that. So since April 18th, we're still working with our Inner Harbor low-wage workers because this includes, it's a geographical area. We're helping all low-wage workers down at the Inner Harbor, regardless where they work, restaurant, retail, cleaning the harbor, cleaning the bathroom, it doesn't matter. If you're a low-wage worker, you're included in the human rights zone. Okay? So, you guys, we just appreciate to be invited here because the reason why we wanted to tell you about this is because this is why we're here, so we can get this radio connect. Because we need to get our voices not only out into our own communities to let them know what's going in their own, on in their own city, because the Inner Harbor in Baltimore City is not for the people and the residents and the citizens of Baltimore City. They used city public money to help build that harbor, to give to those developers, and it was money for housing and for the poor people in Baltimore City, and they promised us living wage jobs when they used that money from housing and from the schools to build the harbor. But they did not give us living wage jobs. So they lied to us. They stole our money. They built the harbor. They lied to us, gave us jobs, and paying us poverty wages. So now the campaign, we're asking for human rights violations around the rights to dignity and jobs, living wages, the rights to education, and the rights to health care. Because over 95% of the people working down there don't have health care, don't have. They're making, all of them are making poverty wages. Nobody has health care, and nobody has access to education to better themselves, to get better jobs. So we're here to understand this media process so we too can have an independent radio and media in our city. We thank Media Mobilizing for coming out and covering the fair, and also the independent radio station that came out to cover our fair on April 18th. And thank you for the inspiration to let us come here and know how to get our own radio group station.
We also heard from Romeo Ramirez of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, or the CIW, a group that fights for the rights of rural farm workers in Southwest Florida. CIW built their own LPFM station, Radio Conciencia, with the help of the Prometheus Radio Project 6 years ago.
Sí, bueno. Como me presenté hace rato, yo vengo aquí de la coalición de Immokalee.
As I presented myself earlier, I come from the Coalition of Immokalee Workers.
Una organización de trabajadores mexicanos, guatemaltecos, haitianos.
It's an organization of Mexican, Haitian, and Guatemalan workers.
En lo cual se organizó para dar fin a lo que es los bajos salarios.
In which is organized to for an end of low wages.
Fin a la esclavitud moderna que nace dentro de la agricultura agrícola.
To give an end to the modern day slavery that's born within the current agricultural system.
En los últimos 13 años de la organización, lo cual hemos llevado a las Cortes Federales 7 casos.
In the last 13 years, we've brought 7 cases of modern day slavery to the federal court.
Cuando hablamos de 7 casos, no hablamos de 7 trabajadores.
And when we're talking about 7 cases, we're not talking about 7 workers.
Hablamos de 7 que nosotros le llamamos contratistas, que manejan cada contratista diferentes números de trabajadores, entre 100 hasta 700 trabajadores por año.
So we're talking about 7 contractors that went to federal court, and within those contractors, they had between 100 and 700 workers enslaved.
Y como parte de eso, también tenemos como el trabajo de la estación comunitaria de bajo poder.
And as a part of this, we have our low power station.
Pero ¿cómo manejamos todo esto? Bueno, manejamos en el sentido cuando estamos demandando, bien a la pobreza, estamos demandando a que el aumento por cubeta de tomate se debe de aumentar.
So, and how do we control all this? We use this because we're in a fight to raise the wages for each bucket of tomatoes picked.
Demandando un centavo más por cada libra que pase al trabajador.
Demanding that one penny pound more of tomatoes picked is passed along to the worker that picks that tomato.
Y un código verdadero que garantice los derechos reales de los trabajadores.
And a true code of conduct that guarantees the rights of workers.
Por mucho tiempo, los trabajadores solo estábamos enfocados en contra de los rancheros, pero vimos que el problema es demasiado grande, es cuando lanzamos la campaña por comida justa.
For a long time we were focused on these violations, focusing on the ranchers or the growers, but then we launched our campaigns for fair food.
Cuando lanzamos la campaña por comida justa, nos lanzamos en contra de las cadenas de restaurantes de comida rápida.
And when we launched our campaign for fair food, we took on the fast food corporations.
Nos enfocamos contra Yum Brands, dueño de 5 restaurantes.
We took on Yum Brands, for example, which is the owner of 5 different restaurants.
Y luego hasta el momento hemos llegado a que estos restaurantes aceptan nuestra demanda. Hasta el momento tenemos a 5 ya que han aceptado.
So up to this point, we now have 5 agreements in which these corporations have accepted our demands.
Tenemos como, por ejemplo, John Brands, McDonald's, Burger King, también tenemos Whole Foods Market y tenemos Subway.
Okay, so we have Yum Brands, we have Burger King, McDonald's, Subway, Whole Foods, and Taco Bell.
Bueno, es parte de Yum Brands.
Part of Yum Brands, yeah.
Hasta el momento seguimos con la campaña. Todavía como la campaña en contra de Sedexo que vende comida a las universidades.
So we continue with the campaign, but now it's a campaign against Sedexo, which provides a lot of food for universities.
Pero como aquí se trata de asunto de radio, no me voy a meter en historia de todo lo que la campaña que tenemos.
Because I'm here to talk a little bit more about the radio. I'm not going to get deeper involved into the whole campaign that we're involved in.
Pero igual, sin tener un medio comunitario, es mucho más difícil organizar en las comunidades.
But equally, without having a community media outlet, it would be so much more difficult to organize in the community.
Desde que tuvimos la estación en el 2003, ha sido un poco más fácil de movilizar gente y a que la gente salga en las calles a marchar.
So since we've had the radio station since 2003, it's been easier to mobilize people and to bring people out into the streets to march with us.
Hasta el momento, las estaciones comunitarias, en la experiencia que tenemos, ha sido un arma más para que se difunda el mensaje, no solo de las organizaciones, sino de los movimientos sociales al nivel de lo que ocurre en las comunidades.
So up until this moment, to have our own community radio station has been a very important weapon, not only to get information out there, but to organize in the community.
Entonces hemos tenido el reto, como por ejemplo, nuestra estación comunitaria no se ha metido en competencia, pero las otras radios comerciales la han visto como una competencia, porque cuando nosotros convocamos a la gente que sale en la calle, sale.
So we're not actually in competition with the commercial radio stations, but in some ways they see us as competition because when we call people to the streets, they come, it works.
Por ejemplo, normalmente las estaciones de radio comerciales, cuando tienen un control remoto, solamente es el locutor hablando o unos 50 personas alrededor.
So when you have the commercial radio stations, it's normally one person speaking with only like 50 people listening.
Pero no, es como cuando se trata de un control remoto, cuando tienen las estaciones de radio comerciales.
Okay, so when you have the commercial radio stations, it's only 50 people or so?
No. Sí, exacto.
Okay, so it's being transmitted from somewhere else. So it's like remote control and they're not in the community.
Y cuando estas radios comerciales tienen control remoto, muy pocas personas asisten a este control remoto.
So when these community radio stations have remote control, there are very few people that actually attend to it.
Nosotros hemos visto cuando con nuestra radio, cuando tenemos un control remoto, atraemos hasta de 200 mínimo a 700 personas.
So when we have remote control, we have between 200 and 700 people tending to it.
¿Por qué viene esta gente? Bueno, porque nuestra radio es una radio que atrae más porque es la misma comunidad. El mismo compañero que trabaja en el tomate es el mismo que está hablando en la tarde, en la mañana.
So why does this attract so many people? Because it's people from within its own community, people who are picking tomatoes one day, working at the radio station the next.
Oh, es una radio donde la gente crea más en lo que se está diciendo porque es más como de educación popular.
And it's also where people believe so much in what is being said because it's more like popular education.
Pero el problema más grande que yo creo todos los que estamos aquí, los que pertenecen en la radio, ya lo saben, el problema más grande que enfrenta una radio de bajo poder es que no tiene mucho alcance, solo 100 watts de potencia.
So as we all know, one of the challenges that we face with a low power station is that it doesn't have a lot of power, only 100 watts, so it doesn't reach as far as we want.
O no hay dinero para que construir una torre de alta altura para que pueda llegar más alrededor de las comunidades.
Or there's a funding problem in which it's difficult to build a tower that would reach far enough.
Entonces, pues la coalición está aquí presente, ¿verdad?, para no apoyar a Prometheus, sino ayudar, sino contribuir lo que se puede para empujar a los representantes en los estados que venimos para que apoyen una resolución legislativa para que beneficie no solo para los que ya tenemos, sino para comunidades que no tienen y que la necesitan.
So we're not only here just to support Prometheus, but we're actually here to really push the legislators to make a change, not only for those of us who already have radio stations, but for all of those who don't have radio stations, that they have a voice.
De hecho, nosotros hemos tenido como, por ejemplo, el senador Sanders de Vermont, que es el patrocinador de estas leyes de medios. Nosotros hemos hablado antes con él para que cuando haya estas puertas, bueno, que se empuja más porque es tan importante un medio comunitario, es independiente.
So, for example, we've had relationship with Senator Sanders from Vermont, and through that we can say, now it's really important, community media is important, and we need you to push harder.
Entonces, estamos aquí no solo para escuchar, sino cuando nos toca ir, pues, colaborar en algo.
So we're here not only to listen, but also when it's our turn to collaborate.
Pues, gracias.
It was really exciting for us to bring a lot of grassroots activists to Washington. I think it's very important for people to come to understand how decisions about our country are made. At Prometheus, we try to demystify not just the science and technology of radio, although that's a very central aspect of our mission, trying to make radio technology accessible to all and teach the basics of radio to anyone that wants to learn so that it is not a source of power by elites, but something that is shared by all. But we also try to demystify the political process. And while there are a lot of things about the American political process that we fundamentally disagree with and think are unjust, we think that it really helps to have people come and look at it up close and learn a lot more about it, because if we want to make all sorts of changes, this is a great opportunity for people to understand how that gets done and what the possibilities are and what the limitations are of the current way that Washington does business. And so we really hope that people not only worked hard on this campaign but also in other issues, you know, throughout the social movements that we care about, immigration reform and the prison industrial complex and the war, that people picked up skills that will help them to be able to influence decisions in all different social movements. So we were really excited to be able to bring a lot of people and get them to see very close up how the government works.
Reporting for CKUT in Montreal, I'm Annabelle Kuhn. For more information on the LPFM movement or how to support the campaign, please visit www.freepress.net/LPFM or www.prometheusradio.org/take_action.
Se puede. Can we? That's a question. Can we? And then the answer is usually, yes, we can. Si se puede. And the reason behind that is a positive message that goes to the root. And the root of it is unity and the mentality. We think that it's positive, something positive is going to happen. So let's try it, okay?